Good morning. I know a lot of you have planes to catch, so we'll try to get started a little late, but as people are straggling in, I agreed that we'd hold off just a few minutes. We are being mic'd. Today, I'm Marty Ellingsworth from ISO. I'm going to talk about predictive modeling and marketing applications. I'll do some introduction around what marketing departments do, and then talk about personal lines, and then I'll pass it over to Gary, who's going to talk around commercial lines. So I'll be the B2C, and he'll be the B2B play today. And at the end, we'll open up to questions. So first, by show of hands, how many of you actually do anything with marketing analytics? Wow. Okay. And for those of you that raised your hands, are you working on underwriting, portfolio assessment, or more database marketing campaigns? Second one. So marketing campaigns. Well, good. It's nice to see that there's a actuarial influence into the sales generation process well underway. So my review today, we're going to take a quick peek at what marketing says it does. Discuss an idea of wallet share, look at risk scoring briefly, and then explore the good news is aligning marketing and underwriting philosophies. So as a general overview, all companies kind of make stuff, sell stuff, and service stuff. And I try and show this slide a lot because I'm stumping for the predictive analytics pervasive use across organizations and enterprise value. So when I put up underwriting and sales and distribution and claims, I'm also trying to put up places where I've seen companies have significant business value added in projects that they're doing. So on underwriting, risk selection and pricing is the big news. That's the competitive 800-pound gorilla that almost every department that I've talked to in the top 25 carriers have a concerted effort on better pricing and risk-based pricing. And if every price has its own risk or risk has its own price, maybe you don't have good customers and bad customers. You just have customers that are perfectly flat in loss ratio. And that's the goal. But in most cases, there's a distribution of good and bad customers. And the marketing and underwriting are trying to figure out how to keep the good ones, how to find more people like them to acquire as new business, and then how to manage the not so good customers. Sales and distribution have the responsibility for top line growth in new business. It's hard. It's a very competitive marketplace. There's over 300 insurers, writing business in personal lines. Probably an equal amount, writing business either at the national or local level in commercial lines. It's very, very competitive, and not just price, but also service and brand. So marketing is looking at all those pieces. And then from the brand and the service delivery side, you have your claims department, which is doing all the customer-facing interchange when something bad happens, when there is a claim event. Brand value, linking that to your value promise, and then delivering that marketing message is, everyone kind of feels it's a soft science, but I hopefully can persuade you to think that the marketing folks are just as smart and just as mathematically inclined and just as talented when it comes to predictive modeling as the actuaries over on the pricing side. So customer focus is the thing that the marketers are all about. There might be risk-based pricing for auto, but there's also risk-based pricing for home, and how much should you charge for coverage away from school or a coverage C policy. As you look at the life of a insurable person, they go from their parents' house away to school. They go on vacation where they need coverage out of area. They, you know, buy a car and need auto insurance. They get married and decide to have life insurance. They get a house and then they want home insurance. As they make enough money, they start to buy, you know, nice things for each other, and now they need you know, scheduled value possessions. And at the end of the day, when they have a lot of assets, they might even pick up an umbrella coverage. You know, so the wallet share of a client, you know, is the sum of all of these coverages that you may decide to offer. If you're a multi-line carrier with a lot of business, you're also going to try to figure out not just risk-based pricing for an individual product, but, you know, how can I look at customers as a lifetime value proposition? You know, how will I, you know, keep them? How will I hold on to them? The cost of acquiring new business is you know, not insignificant. Yeah, it may cost you $500 or more to advertise, you know, collect someone's interest, sign them up, process their paperwork, and then over time, you'll net that back. And if you keep them for long enough and add enough products, and they're really a good risk, you know, that'll be the core of your profitability. So stackable coverages can show wallet share of customers. There's a lot of you know, actuaries I met here that you know, complained that they can't get their policies linked across auto and home and SVP and life and all these other things. And that's going to be a challenge for everybody. But you know, once you solve the data problems, you can stack up, you know, how much insurance does the person currently have with you. And then the from the marketing side, try to figure out based on their life stage and their segmentation, how much should they have? And that's going to be, you know, the window for you to do cross-sell and upsell. If they don't have enough insurance, then you should be trying to sell them more, or figuring out you know, who else is selling to them, so that you know, if they're a good customer, you can pick up as much of their risk as possible. So this is a slide that I think you'll probably see in the Data Miner's Handbook, you know, by Barry and Linhoff. You know, this is how do you move from a prospect to a responder to your look at your current customers and look at your former customers, and what are the different types of analytics that you would build from a predictive modeling standpoint, and what are the type of strategies you would take from a management standpoint. Now, if you don't have responsibility for these things, you know, because you're the rate-making actuary, you have cohorts in your company that are responsible for these things. And, you know, this piece of this program is just to let you know that, you know, this is the type of job and type of problems that they deal with day to day, and that you might even rotate into at some time further in your career. So the big pieces around acquisition campaigns is that you know nothing about the prospects. You might know that there's a database list someplace that has names on it. These databases or prospecting databases have a lot of energy put into them by the owners to add new information. There's a national householding database. There's a lot of different database vendors that you can go to you know, buy targeted lists and a lot of different features that you can work from there. And we'll talk about that in a minute or two. The key pieces here on looking at your current customers, though, is there's a natural segmentation of, you know, your most profitable, your, you know, next most profitable, and your currently not profitable groups. And for those, there's ways to try to influence them with service differentiation, you know, re-underwriting in some cases. So on your most profitable, you really want to pay attention on your retention programs, your cross-sell, upsell programs. For the medium group, you'd look at loss control services, agency contact, re-underwriting, again, cross-sell and upsell, because the more the wallet share you have, the more yield and right pricing optimization you can work out. And the longer you keep a good risk on your book, you know, the better chance you have of having a profitable customer. And for the ones that currently are not profitable, In some cases, you'll cancel the policy if it's legally appropriate in the state you're working in. In other cases, you'd work on risk-based pricing and try to make up for whatever you didn't know about them when you priced them the first time. The portfolio view of good and bad customers would put people at who is the most profitable, who's the least profitable, and who's in the middle. You can look at this as a lift chart or a gains chart or a distribution. The idea though is that over time you'd want to see your portfolio year over year get better. And that's type of this slide here is something you should be doing inside of your own portfolio to take a look at your book and say, is my book growing? Is it growing profitably? And my end stage strategy is to have the book shift higher and to the right, where the right is the more profitable group. And that profitability can be from customer selection as well as risk-based pricing. The overarching piece of analytics, and this is a slide I borrowed from Forrester Research, is that analytics is the glue that holds all these things together. You have marketing and sales and service. You have different channels that you could contact people with, face-to-face, probably the most expensive one, mail, telephone, internet. All of these different contact channels have different price points. And we'll talk a little bit around direct mail as a way for marketing to personalized customers. So the sales funnel starts out with a list of all possible insurable households. If we're going to talk about home insurance and all licensed drivers, if we're going to talk about auto insurance, and from there you can select your prospects. Try to get their attention and turn them into a lead. From the lead, you try to qualify them as good. Are they going to be good for you or not good for you? How would you price them? Down into making them a customer, and then from there, all sorts of customer analytics around retention. Who's going to leave you? How can you try and make them an offer that would keep them from leaving you? Effort left undone by the marketing department to try to hold on to the valuable customers and relationships that your companies have built. And that's a much harder task than just running a model. There's all sorts of operations and touch points that the entire organization needs to sign up for as an enterprise to deliver your value promise, maintain your message, and communicate with your customers. So there's a difference between direct mail and advertising. Advertising is kind of like the radio ads that Allstate plays or the television ads. It's kind of a mass appeal. Direct marketing is very targeted. We send a message straight to your home. We send an email straight back to your account. We have an agent show up at your house. Advertising, you're competing for attention. Direct marketing is more selective attention because you're targeting who's going to get the message. Advertising is broad. Direct marketing is deep. The idea for advertising is to remember them. So the brand affiliation is when I say who's a big named insurer, you'd come back and say, well, Fireman's Fund's a big named insurer. So they do a lot of ideas around brand response and do you know who you are, versus direct marketing is asking you, hey, you got this piece of mail for me or you got a phone call for me. If you're interested, I want you to take action and become my customer. So one's an impression versus one's a decision. Advertising, you pay for everyone. Direct marketing, you only pay for the targets that you're marketing to. So the selection factors for a typical consumer list our age and income and gender and marital status, sounds a lot like your class plan factors. So you can target who you're going to send stuff to based on features that would, in your segmentation process, line up with risk profiles. Now the the things that you wouldn't necessarily have from database marketing is you don't get their driving history, you don't get their the type of vehicle they have, you don't have any of the personal information that would really, you know, affect the overall price that they would get. So the a lot of companies and a lot of direct mail is kind of a teaser rate. You know, we can beat your price by this much, or, you know, come talk to me and you'll save 15% or more. And then when they finally show up, you know, and they get all the real details, it's like if you really are a horrible driver, you're going to have a high price from everybody. and some people might price you even higher so that you wouldn't come to talk to them. Based on the type of accidents you may have had. The other things that you would look at, and not just, you know, we're talking auto mostly, but the same idea for homeowners insurance. And the same type of information stands for businesses. On the business list, you can get, your SIC, the standard industrial classification, the employee size, annual revenues, the title of the people you're going to mail to, years in business information, geography, credit information. A lot of the information comes from, third-party databases, but if you have an appetite to write florists, well, you can target all the florists in the geography that you want to write in. Just a quick look at B2B. There's and this slide is kind of old. It's a 2005 budget allocation from a Forrester study, but I wanted to just show that, direct mail could be, 10% or more of the overall budget in the marketing and advertising department. And there's all sorts of other information on how they're doing print ads and different media mixes in the marketing sphere. So they're not just doing, one thing. They're doing multiple things across multiple channels to get your brand value promise out, and they have a lot of predictive modeling opportunities to manage the expense of each of the different campaigns and to track the outcome of the different campaigns, to do campaign analytics and customer management. So on the data-driven campaign management front, all the different things for targeted marketing, what do you want the person to do? Do you want them to buy more stuff from you? If they have auto, should they buy home? If they have a profile that says they're a good risk, what type of benefits could you, send their way that would make them feel valued and appreciated and not want to shop? If you had new products that you think they would be needing, or if you had new services or new channels, those would be the ways that you would target your message out to the potential prospects. The data-driven campaign is where you can use the information and the prospecting cycle with a kind of a learning loop. You prospect, you market, you get the results, you tally up how the campaign went, you learn from that, and you try and make that kind of a virtuous circle, because you're always going to be prospecting, you're always going to be trying to get new business and growth. And a lot of companies have moved into the environment of prospecting databases, which is yet another idea of another data warehouse that you could potentially, in rate making, look at. Who's coming to your door? Many times these data warehouses also have comparative rater information. So, if you work with one of the comparative raters, you can take your customers at your rates, get the comparative rating from all the different, other companies out there that would give a similar quote to your person, and see if, are you for a person, a certain class plan, like young males driving sports cars, are you the lowest priced carrier in the entire market? If you are, you might want to reevaluate, how come the other 30 carriers that I'm getting quotes from are all higher than mine. It doesn't necessarily change what you would do, but it would change your viewpoint of yourself in the market's eyes, so that you can see what everyone else is doing relative to your individual pricing plan. On the personal auto risk framework, the things that would go into a rating plan, like state and territory and vehicle age and symbol and class plan, your class factors, your limits, deductibles, any special adjustments, that's what the ultimate price is going to be. From a marketing standpoint, when you're looking at prospecting, all you really have is a name and an address. So you'll know the state, you'll know the zip code, you know, you can figure out what the base rate for your territory is, and then you can say, well, if I want to, you know, what do I do after that? The things you do after that are your database marketing and targeted marketing, which says, okay, I've got a geography I want to grow in. How do I pick people, you know, out of there? You'll go to the mailing list. You'll go to the factors. And the newest thing coming up in predictive modeling and marketing is using, you know, risk profiles and risk scores, you know, at the, you know, address and geography level to, you know, improve what you're currently doing with your regular block and tackle. You know, I want middle-aged married people driving what we hope are Suburbans, or, you know, big trucks, things like that, to, you know, how much, where do they drive, you know, inside of a territory that might have a better potential for being a good customer. And, you know, kind of a look at this, you know, micro territory analysis. I use the zip code where my office is in downtown San Francisco. We have, you know, Knob Hill, which is kind of an upper scale neighborhood with expensive cars. We had the Tenderloin, which there's a lot of, you know, uninsurable, you know, people without cars. Japantown, which is a very quiet, you know, modest neighborhood of you know, people don't speed around much. And Fisherman's Wharf, which is a, you know, a crazy, you know, area full of tourists, all in rental cars that don't know where they're going and don't know how to handle all the one-way streets, and are distracted by all the sights and sounds of the city. So, you know, there's a very, very different risks inside of a current territory. And I think a lot of carriers not just would have, you know, 94109, you know, with a single rate, they would have most of downtown San Francisco as a single rate. So looking at small area geography, as an overview, you know, using census information, you can, you know, target in from the smallest unit that you would look at, which is a block, up then rolling up to a block group, to a census tract, to a place, to a county, to a county division, and then up to a state. You can see that there's a lot of information that you could ascribe to, you know, a local geography. And some of that information would be business points. Some of that information would be, just like at the downtown San Francisco example, you can see, you know, how close are you to all sorts of different traffic generators? How close are you to busy intersections? How close are you to highly dense commercial districts where there's you know, peaks and valleys in the traffic and the commute? How close are you to schools that have, you know, a surge of activity in the morning and a surge of activity in the afternoon as people are, you know, picking up and dropping off their kids and going other places? And as you add up these different you know, type of driving risks, you know, you can get a very, you know, fine-tuned, fine-grained risk indicator of, you know, how risky is one area versus another, you know, to have your car or to have your house. This is an example of Newark, New Jersey area, where one company has, you know, applied that type of you know, geographical risk analysis to a refined level. This map here is painted on a block group level because it's easier to see that way, and you can see that, you know, in the local area inside of the zip boundaries, there's a lot of you know, differentiation that you could do. And if you decided to try and market to groups that had a lower overall risk rating than the average for the territory, you could link up the geographies of the better places to drive from a risk standpoint with the mailing and routes, and you know, send your direct mail, you know, straight into you know, the best parts of that territory. Or if you have different underwriting programs for different risk levels, you know, differentiate the message you're going to send you know, into the mailing route process to have things delivered you know, in a direct mail process straight into your prospects. You could also use the same score, you know, with your current marketing list to kind of do a champion challenger process around, you know, who should you mail to. And if you did a, you know, that kind of champion challenger, if the risk profile, you know, score, let's say your risk-based pricing algorithm, you know, you've invested all this time and money into this pricing algorithm. If you decompose your pricing algorithm to just look at the geographical information, you'll get a segmentation process. Marketers do this all the time where they say, well, is there any other score? Is there any other information I could use? And they do a champion challenger or even a nested effects type of analysis. So they'll pick up a new piece of information, a new score, a new index, cross it with what they're currently doing, and look to see, is there any, you know, inside of the current segment lift? And, you know, what you'd hope to see if what you're looking and evaluating is useful, is you'll see segmentation inside of your current band. So in this case, if you looked at band 3, and you go back into the slide from light blue to red to yellow to green to purple, you see that the bars get higher. So there's differentiation where before you just thought, you know, a 3 is a 3, out of 5, it's kind of in the middle. Now you can see that by using this new piece of information, you can get segmentation inside of that current band, and that instead of 5 groups, now you have 25 groups. And, you know, picking who do you want to market to, or how would you consider pricing in that scenario, gives you more information to use in your marketing campaign. And hopefully, while this wouldn't necessarily change who's going to, you know, respond, of the folks that do respond, it should give you a better comfort that you're getting the best risk in that campaign. So on the competitive advantage, looking at the territory, you'd have a base rate for each territory. If you looked at your risks and losses over a time period, you'd find that there's some people in that territory are more risky than others, and they've shown up in your books as losses. You'd want to try and, you know, market to people more like the most profitable in that group. If you could, you know, have a marketing pre-screen tool or index that would mirror the variance and the variation inside of different territories around riskiness and around likelihood for future loss, then you could target which ones do you want to attract and which ones do you want to avoid from a direct mail and advertising standpoint. Not advertising, because that's going to get everybody, but from a direct marketing standpoint, you can say, I'll put my resources on everybody below the line and let my competitors, make the mistake of marketing to everyone else. So in summary, marketers can use sophisticated models, and when you have collegial over the fence discussions, be ready for them to come back at you, their marketing degrees, their neural nets, their predictive models for all sorts of campaign management, cross-sell, retention, portfolio update. They probably have done book analysis and profitability analysis that they could share with you about things you didn't know about your book. They track, how their book of business goes from year to year. Not just from a triangle standpoint, but by, per customer, per product that customer's household has, and they're very sophisticated at it, and they're working to do more in terms of their new business acquisition and wallet share to manage the portfolio into a higher, smarter, more profitable book of business. Risk-based pricing helps a lot because you don't have as many bad customers. If everyone has the same loss ratio, they're all good customers. But applying that into the lifetime value model is, how, now that you've priced them right, how long do you retain them? When do they earn back? When do you break even on an individual customer from the cost of acquisition to, they've paid for their expenses of being acquired? And I guess finally, it's not a competitive advantage if you don't use it. So if you've got a great rating model, you should be working with the marketing department to have them use the factors that you're finding useful to try to influence who you're prospecting. With that, I'll turn it over to Gary.
Okay, my name is Gary Ciardello. I'm actuary at Ernst & Young, and I'm going to focus on commercial lines. My role in the predictive modeling space is more from business development side. I'm going to present this more in terms of from a business perspective as opposed from a modeling perspective. We've built quite a few marketing applications, and I'm going to put in here some of the learnings that we've taken away from some of those applications. So as an overview, I'll go over the purpose of the application. The objective really is, you know, what do you want to design? What do you want the application to achieve? The types of marketing applications really get at the amount of external data. And as more time goes on, clearly it's evident that there's more and more external data that's out there to mine, to utilize. So you can look at, in some instances, you can look at external response data. In some instances, you can get external data on predictors that are in your underwriting model. So there's a fair amount of external data, and to the extent that it's available, obviously you want to leverage off that. And ultimately, the deliverable, which is it's some form of a list that you want to provide. And I think what's key there is really with the distribution channel and what's relevant there. There's not a lot of discussion on the distribution side of the house, but clearly that's a big factor in this whole process. If you're an agency company, you have to understand how your distribution works, the strengths and weaknesses of that distribution, and how that aligns with your own strengths and weaknesses as an organization. So I'll talk a little bit about that. So as I like to always throw a value chain slide up there, you know, predictive modeling is pretty widespread in insurance, certainly on the pricing and underwriting. And, you know, as time goes on, there's more and more discussions outside of that arena. Certainly there's been a lot of work done in claims. And so marketing and sales is an area that there's been more and more work done. So what are you trying to achieve in a marketing application? Well, you know, in talking to a lot of marketing folks, better alignment between what they do and what underwriting does is a key issue. So how do they most effectively spend their time to go after the risks that we as an organization can effectively write and are going to be accepted? You know, it isn't part of what's filtered out in the underwriting process. So what can we learn from the underwriting models that we can provide to the marketing folks and help them to do what they need to do? There's certainly an acquisition cost issue. Is there ways that we can profile risks to minimize acquisition costs? Maybe we'll use some of the predictors to kind of screen out as a first round, and then we'll go down a process of you collecting more information to see which risks actually make the final cut. That could help from an acquisition cost perspective. And as always, whenever we grow, we've always got this issue of loss ratio, new business loss ratio. So how do we minimize the gap between new and renewal business? And how do we grow in a profitable way? Again, want to focus on the strengths of the organization, where we're competitive, our segmentation is refined, and where our distribution channel is strong. So all those are relevant factors in the process. So the marketing objectives need to be considered in the application. Where do you want to grow, which areas, and the types of accounts that you want to target? And as I said before, clearly as you pull intelligence out of the underwriting side, there are certain profiles of risks that are more in your sweet spot as an organization. So you're going to look at some of those types of accounts. There's competitive issues. Now, how strong is my brand? That's always a factor you want to consider. In some instances, you know that you don't have to be the lowest price to effectively write business. So there's got to be some assessment of brand. But where is the market saturated? Where is it not saturated? where's the market changing, both in terms of new players that are entering the market, also some of the demographic issues in terms of the types of individuals and accounts that are going into that area. What are some other factors you need to consider? Certainly, where you may be out segmenting your competition. If you feel like that there are advantages there and there are strengths within your underwriting profile, then certainly that's going to be an area of focus. As I mentioned before, there's demographic issues. So how plentiful of the risks that you're trying to attract, and where are they located, where are they going? So you want to look at it in terms of age, class. Is the area, given area, is it shrinking? Is it growing? Certainly those are all factors. New agency appointments are relevant too. Some of the work we've done on the agency modeling side points to issues. I mentioned this at the last session I spoke at. The profitability of accounts, given their relative proximity to the agent's office. If you do some if you study some of that and you look at geocode the address of the account and geocode the address of the agent, you find it's pretty interesting that the further you get away from that agent's office, the less profitable on average the business tends to be. So that's something you want to consider. Where am I appointing new agents? Where are my better agents? Can they continue to grow my better agents? Or have they hit their point of saturation? And where are those new agents being appointed, and how does that align with where I'm trying to target? So that's part of the decision-making process. Certainly, prior profitability by segment is pretty relevant. So we get into the types of marketing applications. As I mentioned before, they're really based on the amount of external data. So we've done applications where we haven't used any client in data. It's totally based on external information. So those are not plentiful. There aren't instances where you can get access to external response data, external data that's relevant to external data relative to the potential predictors that are in your model, or external exposure information. But that is obviously the best way to go about it if you have access to that data. And in some sense, there are certain states that you can get access to data and leverage off that to apply to another state and normalize for state differences. So are there ways around it too, if depending on the what's available in one state and where you're trying to grow. But certainly external response data would be great to have if you can get it. It gets at the whole issue of reject bias that you have to deal with on the underwriting side, which is that you have to really understand who's getting through the underwriting filter as you evaluate your own data, so you don't misinterpret the data and misread what's predictive and what's not. So external response data is pretty valuable if you can get it. The external variables, if you have the unique identifiers, if you have a way of getting at individual, either a customer or an account, then you can append a lot of other information to it, be it credit or other demographic type information you may want to append. But first you've got to have some way of identifying that organization. But there's a lot of ways to do that, and there's a lot of unique identifiers. Federal Employee Identification Number would be one example, SIC codes, NAIC codes are some examples of that. Name and business, name of business and address, you can match on that. You can use that to append external data. It's obviously not as clean, but there's a lot of ETL tools out there that can help achieve pretty high match rates as you link in some external data. So this would be the ideal world. With external claims data, then you're gonna do it. Really, the process is going to be very similar to what you would do on the underwriting side. So you're going to compile data on an individual account, exposure contact data for each account. And then when you build the model, one thing you have to do is you really have to look to see how it compares with the underwriting model. And in some cases, you may find some differences. It may be related to reject bias. It may be the available amount of available data. But you've got to try to reconcile those two, because you don't want, again, to create another problem, which is the old problem where marketing and underwriting don't tend to be in alignment. So you want to compare those models and make sure there's a rationale for their differences and try to to the extent you can, try to minimize those differences. As mentioned before, you want to consider that reject bias that may be distorting some of the underwriting model results. We've actually had instances where we've enhanced the underwriting model through the marketing modeling process. So it's good intelligence to circle back. At the end of the day, you're going to rank the risk based on the scores and the preferred risk profile. So where as an organization do you want to focus, and out of that area, what are the best risks based on how you score them through the model? So if you don't have external claims data, then what else can you, what can you do? There's still, again, you can leverage off your underwriting model. And what you find to be predictive in the underwriting model, again, a lot of times you can pull in those predictors. And as you look at variable importance, there may be 10 or 15 variables in your model. Maybe the top 10 explain 90% of the variance. And if you can compile that information, you're still going to have a lot more intelligence on those risks. So you want to collect as many predictors as you can and leverage off the underwriting model. You do have to do some normalization to the extent that you're entering new territories or states. So you don't want to misread the scores that come out of the model. So that is a step in the process. Again, you want to go through the same process of identifying and scoring all the risks in a territory, utilizing and leveraging off those predictors. You want to compile a list reflecting the existing distribution channel. And again, there you want to consider how you want to assign risks based on proximity and other issues, and depending on whether you're direct or an independent agent company. One aspect of it that we found is that you need to have some referral information to the extent you can. So sometimes you can, if the company is already writing in that area and you're looking to grow in that area, there may be other accounts that you know of that you could use as referrals. So you can put together some referral information to really enhance the hit rate of the accounts you're trying to pursue. What are you trying to deliver? It's a marketing list, and you want to score the accounts from best to worst. You want to have a lot of relevant information, a lot of contact information. If you can get referral information, obviously that's important information, so that you can provide your internal marketing folks with ways of getting at those risks. Here's a simple example. Obviously, there's a lot more information than something we did on the Med-Mal side, but you're assigning a score, you're looking at the scores, you're looking at that closest agent based on geocoding those risks, and you're going to provide some referral information. You may write another doc in the group, or you may know which docs went to med school together. There's a lot of information on that you can assemble kind of referral criteria in terms of who might be the best person, best way to get at that risk. But at the end of the day, you're trying to provide some sort of intelligence. It could be as simple as a spreadsheet, and providing that to the marketing folks. So as I said before, you need to consider the distribution channel. I always think this is the trickiest part of this whole process, because there's just limitations in what you can and can't do, especially as you're going through an agency company and through agents. But again, I think you can geocode addresses and assign risks appropriately. You could, again, look at the strengths of the agents and look at where the profile of that you're trying to pursue, how that aligns with the agency's strengths and their risk profile. So you want to align profitable accounts that the agency writes with profitable accounts that you want to write. And as I said before, you want to look at distance metrics. On the direct side, I'm just talking more about how you help your internal marketing folks, not necessarily in the form of how you would send information out. But again, you really need to, in this case, it's probably more critical that you provide the referral information and help them with regard to how you go after those, whether it's part of a group that risk, or whether there's other entities that are affiliated in some affinity program, whatever it might be. That intelligence is very helpful. Same sort of thing here, you geocode and you map out the targeted accounts and you rank those accounts. And here's just utilizing some mapping software, but in this case, you know, you're going to highlight those most profitable accounts and give the marketing folks some idea of really where those accounts are located, and this may give them some idea in terms of how they want to cut and slice the list. Well, that was pretty quick for me. That's end my presentation. I guess we'll take some questions.